Welcome to Retro Fanfic Retrospective, the podcast where we dredge up old fanfiction and expose it to the cold, harsh light of 2024. My name is Amato, he, him, and with me is...
Della, Spartan 169. Nice. She, her.
And we are, of course, the last two survivors of our elite squad of podcasters.
But of course, podcasters never die. They're just listed as MIA to keep morale up. That's a Halo lore reference.
Oh, that's great. I also just want to point out that if we're part of an elite squad that have been dying one by one, only like one of us is going to have a bad next little while.
Well, since we're talking about Halo Reach, none of us are going to make it exactly. Because Halo Reach is the Rogue One of the Halo universe.
But apparently June doesn't not make it, right? Because there was room for the fanfic to explain what might have happened.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got a Halo fanfic today. As you probably could tell from the episode title and all that. And Tori could not be here today because of life reasons, but replacing them is... a diorama of, what's the name of this team?
Noble Team.
Sitting there by the microphone. Not much to say, but Spartans are indeed, you know, like, action people of few words.
Well, except that in Halo Reach, that changed the formula.
Because you had them talking a lot?
They took off their helmets, Samato.
Technology had advanced enough to make that not super uncanny valley, I guess.
I mean, you're joking, but that's kind of what it is, you know, video game wise.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's like, you know, there's a reason you have people in full helms in like the era of original Xbox and such.
Yeah. With like a combat armor where it's like, oh, that's one polygon because, you know, that's a deflective, that deflects a ballistic shield. No, it's just easier to model.
Exactly. You don't want people running around looking like, you know, Mario 64 Mario or anything if you try to do faces or bodies.
Yeah, well, at that point, because Halo Reach was released in 2010, so it was one of the last Xbox 360 models. So at the end of a console generation, as all of us old people know, people become really familiar with the technology and are able to like really utilize it to its best, I think. Mm-hmm. Ironically, a lot of the best looking games for a console come out in that period. When the old console is still there and the new console is just being introduced, you know?
No, yeah, I totally get it. It's like, you look at the games that came out at the tail end of the Nintendo Entertainment System and how good they looked. Things like Kirby's Adventure 2 or like the later Mega Man games. And compare that to like, oh, the peak of technology of like the graphics of Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, the sprite work they did was amazing. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about Halo, I think for the first time on the podcast.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And this has been kind of knocking about in the back of my mind for a long time because you were fairly into the Halo franchise back in the day. I want to talk about your background with the Halo franchise, but first I'm going to do mine because it's way shorter.
Yes.
I played a whole lot of Halo multiplayer, mm-hmm. So I'm very familiar with driving a ghost off a ramp and charging out at someone with a needler in each hand and getting shot in the head. Like, very familiar.
Okay, so that first one could be any of the Halo games. Second one is specifically Halo 2.
Okay, yeah, we played a lot of Halo 2.
Halo 2 was, like, I think, like, the peak multiplayer fandom of it. I have thoughts. Yeah.
I guess I should also say, I listened to I Like Bees.
Oh, you did?
Yes, which was good.
Did I convince you to do that, or did you come on?
No, I'm pretty sure you shared it with me.
I tried to force everyone to listen to it at one point.
But... and I also remember reading Fall of Reach, but I don't remember, also at your recommendation.
Yeah.
And I don't remember details, though. Like, I remember it...
Oh, I don't either at this point.
I remember thinking it was pretty good, but, like, that's it.
Also, sitting off mic are most of my Halo books that I read at the time... Halo Fall of Reach, Halo First Strike, and Halo Ghost of Onyx, all by Eric... How'd you say that last name? Do you know?
I would try Nyland.
Eric Nyland. Not mentioned here is Halo Flood, which is technically the book in between, written by a different author, but that's just a rehashing of Halo Combat Evolved, the first game. And I think I've mentioned before how I feel about fiction that's just talking about playing through a game.
Oh, I can find you a lot of fanfics like that about, you know, many games.
Well, I feel like every time that's come up and I've been talking about it, I reference Halo the Flood. in the category of video game fiction that's just retelling exactly what happens in the game. There's a couple of lore bits that are added mm-hmm. where like...
Yeah, there always is.
Yeah. Because I was on the forums talking about the lore. And like the only lore bit it added was mentioning that 343 Guilty Spark was looking at a dead Marine and saying, oh, look, there's another dead Reclaimer. Like that did a lot for the Halo lore back in the day.
I understood none of that.
Because in the video game, 343 Guilty Spark calls John 117, the main character, the Reclaimer to like activate the Halos. A lot of people are like, well, is it just this character and specifically? What is it about John that makes him the Reclaimer? And then in the book, it's kind of clarified that, oh, this thing thinks that humans are Reclaimers.
Okay. That makes sense.
Which was had lore implications.
That does sound like a good clarification.
Yes.
And I had a thought, but I lost it there. Oh, yeah. In terms of novelizations of games, I think the only fantasy we've actually read of that was the Wind Waker, the first part thereof.
Yeah.
And that there was also that...
issue, I think.
I was going to say... There was the Kingdom Hearts fanfic that went a little bit too far in that direction up until it kind of started splitting off at the very end and then stopped.
Right. Wasn't the Wind Waker one good?
It was good writing. That was the one written by Rosie, right?
Rosie. That was yeah. good. Yeah. Yeah. That was good. I don't think I read it, but I edited the episode.
Right.
Sounded like you guys enjoyed it.
I think Tori was way into it. And Tori is the resident Zelda expert, so I respect their opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's fair. You know, we have the people that are into that franchise, but I guess that's why I'm here talking about Halo.
That is. And, you know, to finish off things on the table, you've got your copy of Dr. Halsey's Journal, which was part of some sort of like big Halo Reach pre-order thing. Is that right?
Yeah. Halo Reach was the last Halo game made by Bungie before they handed things over to a studio that was created especially for the Halo franchise, 343 Studios.
Okay.
And after this, Bungie went on to do, what's it called? You know, what's it called, Amato?
More Halo.
No. Well, Destiny?
Destiny. Oh, was the Destiny. Wait, no. I just looked up Destiny. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of something else. I have no idea what Destiny is. I've never even heard of it. So
I think it's free to play at this point.
It's an MMO, apparently?
Yeah. I get it. It can be fun. Do I want to explain Destiny?
When we get back to Dr. Halsey's Journal, probably.
Yeah.
Or Halo Reach.
I'm neurodivergent. I can't leave it. Destiny is a multiplayer MMO, but it's a shooter, and the combat style is like Halo, but there's classes with special magic abilities and rankings with guns and like item in like a, you know, World of Warcraft style types of better weapons and magic and stuff like that.
Okay. I mean, sounds like it could be fun, but can I still drive a vehicle off a ramp?
Oh yeah.
Okay. The most important part to me.
Yeah. And just quick Destiny diversion. I don't mind playing it, but I enjoyed the Halo multiplayer, and the thing that it still feels like that with the Destiny multiplayer. But a lot of it is about what stats you have, how good a quality of gun you have, as opposed to like how many hits on target you can get. And it's like, that wasn't for me.
That sounds like a downgrade. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and a lot of the places where it shines is doing like a 4-player group while doing a huge boss.
That makes sense.
Finding
yeah.
mobs.
Doing raid style things, yeah. but as a first person instead of like a RPG, like rotation of your taskbar thing.
Yeah.
That sounds actually really fun.
Yeah, because it's the game 5-second gameplay loop, and Halo really revolutionized that. I think perfected it, which is how it got popular in the first place.
All right, which brings us to Halo Reach.
Halo Reach. Oh, should we talk about how I?
we kind of glanced off of it.
We might keep on referring to it, but let's just sit down. Sit down. Let me tell you a story.
Stay a while and listen.
I didn't have any consoles growing up. I had Game Boys and their successors up until the DS. So in high school, I got to the point where I managed to get enough money and old consoles were affordable enough that I started picking them up from like GameStop. Mm-hmm. So first I got, and this was in like 2004, 2005, which I think was like PS2 era. Mm-hmm. I picked up an old PlayStation.
Sure.
And sat down and started playing through some of the classics, you know, FF7, et cetera. And then at some point I managed to convince my parents to let me buy an Xbox, which was late in the cycle at that time. But it was still a modern console. Mm-hmm. It was still a modern release. And like I remember playing Halo at like a game kiosk at one point, one or two slumber parties. And I thought like, oh, that's like the game play. Well, actually, what
it kind of was at that point.
What I remember was like trying to be at a birthday party, trying to play Halo and trying to figure out how to play a first person shooter on a console the first time, you know, moving one stick, looking with the other, and then trying to do that. And like, so when I did finally buy a used Xbox, I was like, oh, I'm going to get Halo. I'm going to figure out how to do this, how to walk around. But I also didn't have a lot of money, so I didn't have very many games. So that was one I played over and over and over again.
Yeah, that's kind of a lot of the story of like video games as a youth, especially back in the day of like, if you had a game, you had to get as much out of it as you could.
Yeah. And Halo was great because like other people would play it with you. Mm-hmm. And like, I think at that point I did get 4 controllers and I would bring it over to, you know, a friend's house. They've been on the podcast.
Both of them have it at various points. Yeah.
Yeah. So all 4 of us would play Halo.
Oh yeah. Multiplayer. No. And that's what I remember doing. I didn't remember whose console it was, but it kind of makes sense that it was yours because I'm like, now that I think about it, they didn't have an Xbox and a bunch of controllers.
No, they specifically weren't allowed like quote unquote violent games, you know? So I was the hookup for that.
That's right.
And it was a fun group activity where we just got together and we were just playing and like we could go in and out of the game as you like, either mm-hmm. focus on it or we could sit back and just mindlessly do it and talk.
If there were more than 4 people, then you just kind of like trade out sometimes.
Rotate it in and stuff. I can't remember. I don't think Halo 1, you start making game modes. That was more Halo 2.
Yeah, but we played a lot of Halo 2 too.
Yeah. By the time I heard Halo 2 was announced, I was excited. You know, so Halo 2 was like one of the first video games I remember like lining up at midnight to get with my pre-order. Mm. And I got like the special edition with like the metal case. And I was excited. I was watching. I was on the Bungie forums at this point. I was looking at the lore. I was part of a group that talked about trying to unify all of Bungie's lore into one thing. Because all their previous sci-fi games are like vaguely like thematically connected. Mm-hmm. Like their first shooter before this was Marathon. It was an old Mac game. And that was a first-person shooter. But that the theme of that was AIs that have gone rampant, which is still a thing in this Halo universe.
Do they reference specific things from that game?
Rampancy.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the term, huh?
Rampant.
Nice.
Yeah. Where in the Halo universe, smart AIs, quote unquote, are made by copying a model of a human brain. Mm-hmm. That thing, the method that does that doesn't allow the brain to survive. So they do it on people that aren't using their brains at the moment. So what happens is you have like a human mapped personality with AI capabilities, and eventually they start collecting so much data and information that they go nuck and futz. Because at some point, human mind can't deal with gazing into the infinite, you know?
I was going to say that's kind of, you know, a dark background thing in this setting, but I mean, it's just as dark as the Spartans, so like, it's,
oh God,
you know,
and like,
it's consistent with the tone, I guess.
And like Bungie likes the number 7, so like after 7 years, AI start going crazy, and so I think it's in a couple of the games where Cortana's like, "I'm almost 7 years old. It's coming," mm-hmm. you know. So I was very into Halo 2, before it released. I was watching everything, watching all the trailers. Ironically, I didn't get into I Love Bees until like the day after it wrapped up and finished. I didn't realize
you would have been so into that.
I didn't realize what it was. Ironically, we were hanging out one day and Galen was like, "Hey, check out this website. ilovebees.com." I was like, "Okay, cool." And it was like, what's great about it? He's like, "I don't know. It's like a website about someone who really loves bees that like that's like really hacked." I'm like, "Okay, cool, whatever, I don't care." I had organically come into it. And so, like, my high school years was me sitting in my room with my CRT TV with an Xbox, headphones in, listening to the I Love Bees radio play over and over again while playing Halo 2 over and over again.
That's what made you who you are today.
Kinda. Yeah. I think that's enough explanation at this point.
Well, yeah, yeah. No, that was actually a really interesting story of, like, I don't know. Halo played, like, a very key role in your life, more than I, like, quite understood there.
Yeah, and then I had, like, one school year I tried to do college stuff. I moved out to Arizona, moved into an apartment with three guys. I was trying to be a guy, whatever.
Yeah.
And we would play Halo 2 multiplayer as a bonding activity. And that was the first time I lived someplace that had a broadband connection. So I got Xbox Live and played Halo 2 online. And I think that was the peak of my ability.
Oh, probably.
Yeah. Where it got to the point where if I was in a casual birthday party with people, I would, you know, casually smoke everybody in a way that wasn't fun for either of us.
Right.
Or I'd find the two or three other people that played it a lot and we'd go off on our own to start playing our own lobby. And kind of thing where, like, because they had professional Halo players at the time too. Mm-hmm. They had, like, tournaments and stuff where I could play them. I'd get smoked endlessly, but I'd be fascinated to figure out how and why that worked. And I'd be like, oh, I'm dying, but I know why, and this is fun.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like, when you're into something, that's the fun part, right?
Yeah. Well, I think so. It seems like some people are more, like, ego-based or, like, oh, well, especially, you know, I'm talking about Xbox Live. But I enjoyed I was in it for the love of the game.
And that's why you became a Halo coach.
Could I? But yeah, then I followed the franchise Halo 3.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the list here. And then things started to drop off about Halo 3, I think. That was released in 2007. That was 2 years after we got out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
All my friends had scattered off to do, like, college, I don't know, whatever that is.
Something like that.
Something like that.
So yeah, no Halo parties so much.
So it'd be like online stuff, and that'd be something. But, like, then the lore picked up. They had Halo 3 ODST, which was more narrative storytelling in the Halo franchise than before. And because you're playing ODST specifically, which are Marine Special Forces, instead of giant robots. And it was like a noir thing, and you had voices from Firefly in it.
Neat.
And then Reach was the last game made by Bungie, and that was a kind of diversion from everything else. It was the first time you saw Spartan 3s in video games, first time you saw Dr. Halsey, actually.
Well, she seems to be very important.
Very important, but the thing is, Dr. Halsey only appeared in, like, the lore.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't appear in any of the games major. If you're not counting Cortana, which I don't. because Cortana is an AI modeled off of Dr. Halsey.
And that'd be later in the timeline then.
But the thing is, yeah, because normally those impressions are only made of, donated brains.
Sure.
Halsey was so valuable that they cloned her brain.
Oh, more Halseys, basically.
In order to make a Halsey AI.
Okay.
So she kind of saw Cortana as, like, a daughter or something. And so there was that weird connection between Halsey, Cortana, and all the Spartan 2s, like John.
I see, yes. And a Cortana predecessor appears in this comic.
A sister. Another one or something, yeah.
I think we need to get here to the fanfic, but it is very, very narrative, and it makes sense that it would come out of, like, kind of the most character, what sounds like the most character-driven of the Halo games up to that point.
Yeah.
Because this is very specifically a Halo Reach fan comic. That's a sequel.
Yeah, Halo Reach was kind of like their last love letter to the franchise, I think. Kind of. Because Reach, the fall of Reach is a big lore event in the world. And spoilers for the game Halo Reach, you end by handing Cortana off to Keys on the Pillar of Autumn, which is where John 117 is sleeping. And then they do a little epilogue where it's the beginning of Halo. The first scene after they jump away from the Battle of Reach.
So it's a prequel to all of that also.
Yes.
All right. what we're talking about today is a fan comic, which we haven't talked about for a while. I don't think we've had a fan comic since Rescue Rangers. But it's called Halo, A Fistful of Arrows. And it's about like a 90-something page comic written by concept artist Levi Hoffmeyer, commonly known as Leviathan, apparently. It seems like they did some work on the actual like Halo concept art also, or something. And I'm looking at the TV Tropes description right here, that it takes place after the events of Halo Reach and revolves around the story of Noble Team's loyal sniper June and what happens to him between the events of the game and Halo First Strike. And this is one of those works, I don't know if you did any reading about this other than reading the comic itself.
No, I was going to ask you, how'd you find this? I didn't know about this, but I wasn't so much in the lore at that time, but yeah.
I don't know. I was doing some searching about famous, you know, Halo fan works, and it's like the most famous Halo fan work.
Oh.
According to, oh yeah.
I'm sorry, that's going to bug me. You asked me about Dr. Halsey's journal I have on the table here. Halo Reach had a lot of different release editions that came out. This was the most expensive one that had,
I'd imagine,
that had a statue of Noble Team and this amazing real life copy of Dr. Halsey's journal with this book with a whole bunch of inserts. It's great if you can see it.
I got a chance to look at it last week and it looks very cool.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just remembered you asked that question a while ago and just answering that. This is why we need another person to throw off. One person getting too singularly focused on something.
That's okay. We'll get back on track.
Yeah. So how did you find this something that you knew about and I didn't, apparently?
Well, it's just from searching for it a little while ago, because I was like, oh, Halo sprang to mind after we did Alien, just because it's kind of like conceptually in a similar direction. I mean, look, there's space, there's aliens. I don't know. I was just like, oh, let's like do those back to back.
I mean, I appreciate it, but the effects, but I don't think I appreciate the thought process.
Well, when I did search for Halo stuff, this was super easy to find. It's incredibly famous, apparently. Here's what it says on TV Tropes. The comic is an independent work, but earned instant acclaim for its beautiful artwork and faithfulness to the Halo canon. Mm-hmm. It's received a lot of attention among the Halo community and from both Bungie and 343 Industries. The two parties have suggested at various points that A Fistful of Arrows could be taken as broad strokes canon, with the closest it has come to being ascended fanon, which is to say, a fan work that then is incorporated into the canon, being a nod in Halo Infinite Multiplayer, where a piece of intel presents the events of the comic as one of several conflicting reports about June's survival.
Oh.
So it's borderline to being, like, actually canon. It's just like, you know, they don't want to do that because it's not fully, probably, because it's not actually theirs. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, also hosted on Bungie.org, right?
Well, that was the fan site.
That was the fan site.
Halo.bungie.org, or HBO.
Oh, okay. HBO.
That's where I went back in the day to find all the lore implications, all the map-breaking tips and stuff. One of my favorite things in Halo 2 was to find different ways to break the map. Because, like, on Legendary, shit was hard. So at that point, it's like Dark Souls, beat the game if you could. I'd find places to jump up and run past whole encounters if you could. Which I think they patched out of the Master Chief version.
I am, Della, like, watching you, like, have all of these, you know, Halo memories and, like, things that you just can't resist talking about. I'm having flashbacks to Brian Clevenger, like, going off on this, you know, dissertation about how you destroy fools with guile in Street Fighter 2.
It's very flattering. Thank you. Because you see, in New Mombasa, right after you land, you should probably jump up to a lamp, and then they can get you on top of the rooftops, so and you can skip most of the first. Okay, yeah.
But we kind of need to talk about the story.
Yeah. Halo Infinite was the game that just got released 2021.
Yeah, so that's pretty recently. People still remember it. And it's gotten a lot of acknowledgement there. Now, apparently, the way you used to be able to read it was like some kind of Flash thing or DeviantArt, and both of those are down. And on the website that we're going to be linking to, leviathan.bungie.org, front and center, way up there at top, it says Flip Comic Edition.
Don't do that one.
And it describes, oh, it was originally a one big rocket creation, but it was Flash-based, so it's been replaced with a version that acts similarly but isn't Flash-based. So you read that and you're like, okay, well, I guess that's how I have to read the comic. Mm. And then, you know, both of us, if you're like both of us, you read the comic and you navigate with this thing and you're like, this is not great. It's kind of hard to zoom
it's
in.
It's awkward. It's in three parts. And if you click wrong, it clicks off the web page. Yeah.
And then it turns out, hidden in the bottom right part of that website, under the heading digital copy, there's just a PDF. And we learned that too late.
So don't make this mistake if you're going to read this. Go for the PDF on the bottom right where it says digital copy.
This is digital copy.
Yeah.
Now, there is also a soundtrack, which I didn't listen to. Did you?
I took a brief look at the description, and it was pretty interesting because it did get in depth about the game. I didn't listen to it, though. I imagine it's sweeping orchestral or monks chanting.
Seems like it should be that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I appreciate that one of the songs is called A Fistful of Music.
Yeah.
But anyway, other than the fact that the PDF should be the first thing that it shows and it's the last thing that it shows, the website looks very nice. It is a fanfic that has its own bespoke website, and that always makes me happy if it doesn't hide the PDF.
Yeah, despite that, it's a pretty nice website.
Right.
Nice looking one.
Anyway, pulling up the PDF of the story now. It's very, I'm going to say, like, it's very like a trade back graphic novel.
Yeah.
It's got a cover that looks plausibly like it could be just like a, you know, not fan work, like officially published graphic novel cover. It's got June on it.
Yeah.
He's a Spartan.
I have that, like the Halo graphic novel thing that got released. It could have been one of those style of things. Yeah.
But then it's got this like nice page where it like introduces the story and what's going on and dramatis personae with little pictures of the characters and brief descriptions, just like you would get if you're like picking up a volume of like X-Men and it's like, okay, first page, who are these people? Because like maybe you haven't read the previous thing, you need to introduce the characters really briefly. It's neat.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm behind my lore because like they name Noble Six, who's Sir not appearing in this comic.
Right.
It's also Sir not appearing in the game. It's like the character that died before your player created character joins the team. I can't remember if they actually have a name in canon or not, if this is like their version of it, or that's probably from canon, right? I'm just thinking out loud.
I mean, you'd think that would be so. Look, you've got in this huge journal, I feel like the name's got to be somewhere, right?
I mean, well, this person might have seen the Halo Bible at one point, so.
Oh, that's actually possible.
Yeah.
But anyway, then we jump into the story. It starts with a flashback because we kind of have things going between the past and the present being June and Dr. Halsey fleeing the Covenant on Reach and what, trying to escape the planet, basically? I may be simplifying that too much.
Yeah. It follows immediately after like the second or third to last mission in Reach, where I compared this to Rogue One, which is like at some point the members of Noble Team start dying dramatically one by one.
Right.
And so that's at the point where it's Noble Six, the player character, the Carter, Emil, and June. And they've been kind of like commandeered by Oni, which is the super spy network people of the Halo universe, to do whatever Dr. Halsey wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And they've secured that, and they're like, Dr. Halsey's like, okay, I need to go be part of the Halo First Strike novel continuity over here. And so you guys are dismissed. You can go, and the leader, the Noble One, is like, nope, we're making sure you're getting where you need to go. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I don't need a escort. And he's like, great, June, go with her.
Okay, so that's what led up to this. I wasn't quite sure about that context.
Yeah, he says, June, go with her. And because like they've been fighting, they all know Reach has fallen, but they just need to know exactly when.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Halo lore thing. Because at this point, they're like, we're losing, you know, shred all the documents and stuff. They're like, okay, go watch Dr. Halsey, clear up any, make sure nothing sensitive falls into enemy hands.
Like Dr. Halsey?
Maybe. I didn't.
Because if you're coming to this cold, like Dr. Halsey's like the super important scientist person who like knows so many things.
Dr. Halsey made the Spartan program, or Spartan 2 at least, and was the person in charge of decoding all the lore significant alien artifacts.
Well, that's what's happening in like the present of this story is like June's accompanying Dr. Halsey to protect her,
yeah,
whether or not she likes it. And there's flashbacks to earlier missions with Noble teams, specifically, like most importantly, this one that I didn't understand all of the like, you know, situational nuances of, but which involved June having to take a difficult and morally compromising sniper shot at an important time, which is going to be called back to at the end of the story.
Yeah, this is interesting because the flashbacks deal with a part of Halo lore that we don't talk about so much in the first five games or so, which is
like this big government rebellion type thing,
which is
insurrection.
Yeah, the fact that things get kind of Mobile Suit Gundam out there, where it's like you have Earth and you have it's been out making colonies on different planets, terraforming and stuff, and then the colonies are like, hey, so this is cool. So we're
doing our own thing.
We can do our own thing now because you guys are light years away and we have our own specific local needs. And they're like, no.
It's very Mobile Suit Gundam.
Yeah.
I appreciate that comparison.
And so there's been a history of like insurrectionist and separatist and stuff like that who want to be out of the heel of the Earth government's Navy and Army. And so that's something that's been going on in the Halo universe for a while. Because one of the interesting things about the book, Fall of Reach, which is like our first introduction to like the origin of the Spartan program, is that, the Covenant arrived in a human space. Spartans are revealed to the human population as humanity's saviors, mm-hmm, with these, they're highly trained giants with special armor and stuff. And they're like barely managing to hold their own against these technologically superior aliens. But the fact is, these are fully grown people that were raised as kids to be Spartans. So this was a program that existed before the Covenant were around.
Right.
So they're made to, the military was gearing up to put down rebellions and insurrections.
Mm-hmm.
But
I see. So this is an example of the team being used for just that.
Where that's still going on in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And like that sentiment died down a lot after the alien showed up, because then it's like humans strong together, but there was still like discontent throughout all the colonies and stuff. And on Reach specifically, because Reach was the military capital of their Earth Empire, you know. I don't think they call themselves that, but they were their military base, but they're also a large population that wanted to run themselves.
So that, yeah, that makes sense as a location for,
as like a, an insurrectionist hotspot.
Right.
That's also very, very important that they keep a lid on, because all of the naval technology and brass and headquarters and research is done on Reef. It's basically like the space Pentagon.
All right. Well, there's, for the story,
sorry,
I'm just getting a little bit lost in terms of like how to talk about the story here.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I would say, divided into two main parts aside from the flashback, which is Dr. Halsey and June traveling together and basically her being suspicious of June and kind of wanting to find out more about his background and such. You've mentioned before, June's not one of the Spartans that she supervised specifically.
Yeah.
And so he's a bit of an unknown quantity to her. And I get the impression she does not like unknown quantities.
Yeah. She was in charge of the Spartan 2 programs. June and most of Noble 6, except for George, are Spartan 3s, mm-hmm, which is a program that was headed under a different branch of the military.
Fair enough. And so part of that is her like even seeing events from June's past, because they're, you know, logged, there's video logged or what have you, sometimes incomplete video,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, talking with her AI about it, which is also herself, apparently.
She's kind of egotistical, yeah.
And then in the second half of the story, they combat evolved. They arrive at a remaining base that is still under human control, barely. They've got like a couple guards there. That's Castle Base, which is going to be important in like Halo First Strike.
Mm-hmm.
And the second half is kind of June, or maybe even last third, frankly, is kind of them having to defend it and Halsey against a against an attack by some Spartans, including some of the elites. All I know is like
attack
this,
by Covenant.
Covenant, not Spartans. Excuse me.
I think those are the later games.
And you know, all I know about Spartans is there's like the big ones and the little ones, and these are the big ones. They've got the energy claws.
What do you know about the elites? About the Covenant.
There's big ones and little ones.
You said Spartans again.
Ah, oh no. What I know about the.
Also, you're right about the Spartans. That's the Spartan 2, the Spartan 3. These are the big ones and the little ones.
I am now imagining just like little Spartans running around, like, I don't know, riding little vehicles, and it would be great.
That's kind of what it looks like, because like in canon, Spartan 2s are like 7-8 feet tall, just about. So that it other people's just look like little Spartans, little kids.
All right. Sorry. Meant the Covenant.
Yes.
But the thing is, you know, that is a bat, like most good action stories, right? That's a backdrop against which to have character stuff.
Yeah.
Which I did not completely follow, but which seemed fairly well done. Della, do you think you're able to describe what the character arc is of June in this? That, like, they're kind of comparing his, you know, like, the earlier mission to, like, this final mission defend? Like, what is the change that's happening here?
That's a very good question. Because it doesn't mention any specific regret. We just see like shots of, because June is the sniper,
right?
That's also, he's described as like the talkative sniper, and we see with the earlier missions where it's with the human insurrectionists, a lot of shots of him zooming in, looking at people's faces in these tense moments with the orders of, you know, take the shot, mm-hmm. you know, and it's that interesting thing about the sniper from like in stories and stuff, at least in media. There's some real life stuff. I don't know much about modern military and not willing to touch that. It's the fact that snipers have to know exactly who the person is. You can't be as detached mm-hmm. as you need to. And also the fact that you're really putting yourself out there. You're vulnerable because a lot of times in a firefight, you don't know who shot who. People know who was shot by the sniper. So that's an identifiable thing.
That's true.
And so that also means they're in danger, have to be cautious. So a lot of it is him wrestling with his morals, which is something you can do with the Spartan 3s, but not the Spartan 2s so much.
Because they're more brainwashed and raised. Yeah,
exactly. The Spartan 2s, if you don't know the lore, were all kidnapped at age 6. After being identified as genetically superior humans in every way possible, done a lot of training and augmentations and stuff. So they were the best of the best of the best completely. And George, it's a character that shows up in this, is a Spartan 2 who washed out of the Spartan program for having a conscience.
I see. Yeah, so that conscience thing seems to be key. Mm-hmm. One of the things about the flashback mission with the sniper shot is that he's ordered to kill this person who is threatening this major insurrection leader.
Yeah.
And he's, because they want to capture her for the intelligence.
Yeah.
And, like, he's morally conflicted about that because he feels like he shot the wrong person. Like, he did, right? Not like the wrong person, but,
it's like he didn't take the shot when he could have.
Is that what it was? Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. This is a tricky thing because you're not sure what...
You actually have very little access to June's head directly.
Yeah.
Compared to, like, there's more Dr. Halsey, like, saying what she thinks than June saying what he thinks.
Yeah, which is good character flavor, I think. Yeah.
But in any case, at the end, we've got, like, a Covenant guy, like, threatening Dr. Halsey. There's an energy blade. He's in a position to take a sniper shot.
And it goes back to the Noble One's command of, make sure nothing falls into the enemy's hands.
Right.
I have to admit, first time playing Reach, I didn't pick up the dark nuance of that.
Right.
Looking at this, where the order was like, keep an eye on this special high value asset with a lot of secrets. And if anything happens, you know, make sure the Covenant can't use it.
That's right. And so he says, I'll do what's necessary. And this is the dramatic final sequence of the story, right? Where there's like a panel of his sniper sight on Dr. Halsey
mm-hmm.
and, you know, of him getting ready to pull the trigger. Then he moves it over and he's thinking about trying to shoot the Covenant, but like there's some visual things.
It flashes back to, it's the current scene with Halsey and the Covenant.
Right.
And then it's the first scene of the insurrectionist being held at gunpoint. Because the insurrectionist, if we want to describe them, appears to be like a woman crying with a gun to her head, which is, I think, supposed to elicit like sympathetic feelings. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't somebody you want to shoot. And then, well, in the story, she gets taken back to the base, and it turns out she was wanting to be captured and blow stuff up.
Right.
Then it goes to like people in the rubble of that explosion, an arm of that, and then another shot of killing the driver when they tried to arrest, capture her again, who ended up dying.
Oh, right. Okay, that's what that shot is.
Yeah.
It's a little bit blurrier.
And then back to Dr. Halsey.
And then in the end, he has spoken dialogue because, you know, you just talk to yourself sometimes in this kind of conflict where he says, well, damn. It's probably not what you had in mind when I said necessary, Commander, but I'd like to think you would have liked it. Oh, because he said, earlier he'd said, I'll do what's necessary.
Yeah.
And instead of taking any shot, he jumps down completely unexpectedly, takes him by surprise, and tries to, like, and, you know, knocks it away from Halsey and frees her and saves her that way with the cool sword weapon that makes you go, woo, and, like, lunge at the opponent.
Yes, that is it, Amada.
I think that's what it's called, too.
It's called the make sure you don't fly off the map weapon. And or the find the game-breaking places on the map weapon.
Right. And so it's a reckless thing as opposed to a sniper thing to do. It's like going big to try to save her instead of doing the safe thing of killing her.
Yeah, because it's a group of Covenant elites. Of elite elites holding Halsey hostage because they know there's a sniper around, but they don't know where.
Right. And if he had shot the Covenant holding her, that wouldn't have saved her. They would have known where he shot from, and there's other Covenant down there. That's, well, like, not...
Also, the thing is, like, maybe she'd be killed, but they also suspect they want to capture her alive, so
right.
Maybe that
would
have
be
been
even
a
worse
thing.
Right.
But it would have put her in danger, potentially.
So this is a choice that, if everything goes well, actually saves her...
For sure,
right.
Yeah.
And it being a dramatic action movie story, everything does end up basically working.
Yeah, you get a really nice fight sequence. Where first he jumps and tackles them off a cliff. And then, like, and then tells Halsey to run. And then, like, some little long horizontal vignettes of, like, standing there surrounded by elites with swords. You know, shooting one, elbowing the other. Dodging out of the sword as they at least get closer and closer and closer, and then just eventually being overwhelmed.
I thought that was a good page. I was looking at the exact same one while you're describing it, where, like, it's an action by action, you know, full page of like five different actions consecutively in this fight scene.
Yeah.
And it actually does a really good job of conveying the flow of things.
Emotion. Yeah.
Right.
I'm kind of reminded of some paneling in, like, I don't think this is comparable, but it reminds me of, like, stuff in Bone, where you see him, like, running through the forest.
Oh, yeah, I understand.
You really do get the sense, like, of motion of the running.
Now, look, I think Jeff Smith does it better.
Yes.
But you're right. It is reminiscent of, like, as you know, back in, like, I don't know, issue 2 or something with rat creatures pursuing Phone Bone, and it's like, he jumps over a root. There's a panel. You see the rat creatures behind him. He's run further. They're, like, they jump, or, like, one of them trips over a root, and it's just, like... Major motion. And I mean, in Bone, it looks like you remember it as being animated. It's so good. But, like, this also does a pretty good job.
It's reminiscent of, like, animation keyframes.
Right, you know? Right. Exactly.
From pose to pose. Then they get tackled, including by a grunt who grabs them on the leg. The demon forced my own sword upon one of the brothers. And, like, the grunt's just saying, I've got you. And then they're saying, like, we must cleanse this blade with his own blood. And Gene's like, hey, you know the one thing about grunts? And, like, what? All grunts have plasma grenades on them.
Look, as someone who mostly remembers gameplay mechanics from multiplayer Halo, yes, that was very satisfying. Because you also really remember the plasma grenades and exactly how they work.
Yeah, it's like
sticky grenades is what we always call them or thought of them as.
Well, they're sticky grenades,
yeah.
That's what they are. And, like, the dialogue is, well, I've got to hand it to you. You guys are good. Not to mention, you come prepared. Like the plasma grenades, for example. What, half a dozen of them between all of you? And the grunt saying, my holy flare! Only problem with these things, if you're not careful, lights it. and then a two-panel explosion scene.
Yeah.
And then you see all of them dead except for June, who has locked his armor, which makes you invulnerable for a bit until the icon runs out.
Oh, okay. That's what it is.
Yeah. That's what they gave you in order to fight hunters and stuff. So it lets you survive it makes you invulnerable for a second.
Oh, okay. I had no idea what was going on there. I was
that was an armor ability.
And then he's filled with Dragon Ball Ki. I don't know.
Well, that is what it looks like. It looks really cool.
Yeah. No, that full page spread of the armor doing the locking thing apparently looks really nice.
Yeah.
And I mean, this seems to be computer assisted art at this point. I don't know much about art though.
We don't have a resident artist here. We know. Yeah.
But there's cool lighting effects for sure in some of these.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that, the story ends with basically June needs to go hold off or draw away.
Well, immediately after that, he's standing there. There's nobody there. And he's like, "You okay, doctor?" Mm. There's June behind you. Oh, crap. And a hunter is rushing up and then knocks him into a wall. His helmet's off and he's bleeding. And then the hunter... Yeah.
He kills the hunter too.
Slowly advances on Halsey and he gets the hunter and the worms. You always go for the orange part. That's where they're vulnerable.
Oh, okay.
Hunter isn't a creature, it's actually a giant colony of worms.
This is very, very attentive to the details of Halo canon and gameplay, isn't it?
Well, what's interesting is before this, they made it with some ODSTs and they've been defending the spot until they got there. And while they're there, then the Covenant noticed them and send troops to attack them. One of the first things that attacks them is a phalanx of jackals with the energy shields. And the ODST says to another one, "Aim for the notches in the shield." And the other, I remember reading that and thinking that's one of those things that's juxtaposition of fiction and gameplay.
Right.
Where everybody knows that if you're playing through the campaign, you shoot them in the hand, their shield flies away, you shoot them in the head and they're down. It's like, that's the thing that you won't find in the fiction. But then the next thing that they say is that the ODST said it to you is no fucking shit, dude. I'm like, thank you. If you've been in this war zone so long,
right,
fighting these kind of enemies, ODSTs especially, then you know exactly how to deal with a jackal with a hoplite energy shield pointing at you.
Yeah, I appreciate that then.
Yeah. Because it'd be the shields, kind of looks like Greek hoplite shields, and the only flesh you could see was a little bit of the hand and the notch. You'd shoot them there, then they'd fly off, they'd open their arms. It was the same animation every time.
Right.
then they're vulnerable. So it's nice to know that in-universe, that's not something only the main character knows, or the player character knows.
Hmm.
And then, kills the hunter, says, "Are you all right?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm fine, whatever." And she's like, "Okay, let's go." And he's like, "I'm staying here. I had to make sure nobody follows you," which is, I don't get so much in drama, but I think that works in the situation.
It was
more or less.
Yeah, it was a little bit unclear to me the necessity, of what June's actually trying to accomplish here when he, splits off.
Yeah.
But, I accept it, basically.
Yeah, and then it reference back to at the end of the car chase mission. Mm-hmm. Before all of this, June was having issues, and George, the Spartan 2, tried to comfort him with some words. And when Halsey was watching the records, that's where it cut off. And she's like, "Well, what did George say?"
Oh, yeah. She asks, right.
Yeah. June, before you go, can you tell me something? What was it that George said back in Kazon? George, he told me what Chief Mendez told him, that a Spartan can't have his own baggage, his own weight. There's just no room. The weight of all of humanity on his back. Wise words, but just words. And so that's him taking that advice to heart, that he's protecting humanity as a whole and not just himself.
Well, that is true, but he also, after saying that, he kind of follows up with his own internal thoughts that he doesn't share with Halsey,
mm-hmm.
which is that that's not... He's not coming at it from that philosophical level in the moment, he says in his head, but just words. In the heat of it all, words can't always help you pull the trigger. sometimes you just know what you have to do. When you resist that, that's when you can still feel it shaking you from the inside. That's why you're alive, Doctor. I stopped resisting. Be seeing you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, it's just like, it's neither deep philosophy or anything, but like, it's just, from his perspective, he's just kind of trying to do the right thing in the moment and not not get too caught up in his own head.
Yeah, because in the game, Noble Team is meant to be their own cast of characters, and mm-hmm. June's character trait was 1, being talkative, 2, being a sniper, 3, PTSD.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That makes sense. So it's kind of, right.
Yeah, and just referencing, like, the title is A Fistful of Arrows, and shows a symbol, and that's what June has tattooed on the side of his face.
Mm.
It's that symbol of a hand holding arrows with chains.
I think that does leave room for a couple sequels here, which is A Few Arrows More and The Good, the Bad, and the Covenant.
One last arrow.
One last arrow. So it's very much a action movie story mm-hmm. about tough, violent people doing tough, violent things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's 80 pages of comics, which flows fairly quickly. It's kind of a bit of a character meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's pretty cool in terms of like kind of the focus that the author decided to take
here. Yeah.
Of like, you know, it's fairly contained while still feeling like this world feels super rich.
Yeah.
Reading this. But the actual story focus is contained enough that it's not completely overwhelming. It was a little overwhelming for me.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. Fairly digestible and well done, I think.
Yeah. It was a story about like the part of Halo universe that you didn't see too much at that point, the civilian life. Mm-hmm. Like there's a whole part at the end where they describe these characters, like the insurrectionist leader they're chasing, how it's like she's the daughter of like a rich socialite or something, then becomes leader of the local militia and then leads the insurrection. Like a whole backstory, like mm-hmm. presented in the form of dossiers, followed by a whole lot of more interesting expansion of the lore, I think.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that too.
Mm-hmm.
After the story, there's a section called Adjunct.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bunch of stuff. It's a profile of the insurrectionist leader. It's like...
Well, it's a... What was interesting right after that is this thing. Let's see. It has like military stuff around it that said request file only section 2 black mark. Security level confirmed. Loading file 224. Intercepted and decrypted from unknown sources. And it's an essay entitled Why Do We Do It?
Mm-hmm.
Detailing why there's still human insurrectionists in the middle of a war against human extinction.
Yeah, for sure. So it's all in-universe materials here of various sorts. One ends up the planet Quezon, with like highlights like from a tourist manual.
A city, I think.
It's a city on Reach, excuse me.
But yeah, if I can go back to that article for a thing, because like that is, if you're just coming from games, it is baffling why there would be insurrectionists, because you're like, oh yeah, Master Chief, kill the aliens, protect humanity. Why would anybody disagree with anything we said?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like the point of view of like being a civilian in this universe where it's like, oh yeah, all this horrible government oppressive shit is still going on. And just because...
And it's probably worse.
And,
right.
And it's worse because it's wartime and people are clamping down and taking away all their liberties and stuff. And you have this spy organization that's running around without any oversight doing all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, they talk about their philosophy, which is like, they have the idea that the military and the propaganda is making more of the Covenant threat than it is, that to try to justify what they're doing. That's kind of the direction they're going. It's like, if you think that makes sense.
Oh, and to be fair, it would be completely to the UNSC's advantage to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah.
That would make complete sense, whether or not they are, you know, if the threat wasn't that big, then they would pump up the threat to be that big.
Yeah. And they're like, so we help support the cause. We fight the Covenant and stuff. But we want to make sure that at the end of the war, after they defeat the Covenant, that the UNSC is also weak, so then we can take them down too.
Yeah.
So they're thinking about the end game and not really familiar with the whole scope of it, because truthfully, in Universe, the UNSC is probably downplaying how bad the Covenant are.
Right. Well, there's more like universe level threat things going on, right? With the Halo and such. Yeah.
Well, with this war that's been going on for a bit, the humanity is technologically outstripped very extremely. This is like, conquistadores versus Aztec level of, we're just trying to survive. We can't win this.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the civilian population in general doesn't really know that, but we know that as player characters that are in the military complex and read the books and stuff. In the books, they're like, Spartans always win on the ground, but Covenants always win on the sky. It's like,
that's not a great situation to be in.
In a space war?
Right.
No. The Covenant can just roll up to a planet, turn the whole surface to glass and go away and defeat every spaceship humanity has. No problem.
Yep. Well, yep. That's definitely downplayed then. Yes.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about Reach was that they didn't just glass the whole thing. They actually did invade it, which is why it made it interesting in lore for a while.
Mm-hmm. For, I'm sure, lore reasons as well.
Yes, for read the books. Yeah. And then it talks about a little fun thing about Emil and the different carvings he'd put on his helmets.
There's a lot here.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Castle drop, mission summary. And it's all in universe. And what I find impressive here is that this feels like something you might find in some kind of official graphic novel or companion guide.
Definitely.
Done by a team of people. But it appears that this was done by one person who has internalized and thought about Halo lore so much that they just can produce these kinds of documents that seem very interesting and like fit well and expand detail, all kinds of details in whatever direction they think is interesting. It's like so polished, I don't know, in the author's clear like understanding of the world and what they're saying about it.
Well, one of the things that I liked, we'll talk about things we liked,
sure,
but a thing I liked was when Halsey's trying to get information about June, she tasks her AI to pull up information about their missions, and Cortana,
right,
does that by connecting to the AI that's in charge of the city, and that's the superintendent. So it shows all the details, all the stuff from that, but in the borders around it is the superintendent AI breaking down and kind of going crazy.
I see.
And it was in there, you know? You didn't see it? But it's stuff like that they're lost, my children are lost, accessing file 252.
Right, and that's where the file is also incomplete.
Yeah, but and it's like, my city is burning, all those little lines. But in the adjunct part where it has like Quezon, City of Light, all the things, and it has like the superintendent AI doing like helpful things, showing up in little hat and scarf, talking about how great it is in the winter. Then eventually breaks down and talks about how the operation was covered in the news with a little superintendent AI going, what do we have here? Oh, so that's how you spun it. And then just like parentheses afterwards, they will never know the truth. She was taken to Oni. She spoke of the big picture, parentheses. We know what methods the ghost used upon her. And they took her away off of this doomed brackets Earth/Hearth.
Oh, yeah.
I traded one enemy for another. While the insurrectionists had a motive, an agenda, these creatures spared no thought in their rampage. As the soldiers held the Covenant back, my denizens attempted to flee in the Great Exodus, which is one of the missions in the Halo Reach, where you try to excavate civilians. The Quis was flooded. The wealthy and connected went first. The wounded went last or were left behind. And then my home, my sculptures, my veins, and my blood was burned away. I had been forced into the sublevels, trapped in my own mind. I cauterized my wounds, but in doing so, sealed my escape. I live. That is something. And others too. Those that refuse to leave, hiding in brackets, bunkers, slash tombs, bracket. And then like talking with the AI.
You are right. Somehow I kind of missed that the tour guide part and the part kind of starting with the news article were the same thing.
That's what I broke down into.
That's like a 4-page fanfic by itself.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it goes on. I wish to help them, but I do not know how. Then you came, asking questions, opening doors. And a door once opened can be entered from either side. Parentheses. Hello, Camilla. I think that's her name.
Right, of the other AI.
Yeah. Hello, June. I remember you. I see Oni now in their hidden dwelling beneath the streets. I see what they were building. I have a way out. And then Camilla talking. I'm sorry, but I must end this connection. Best of luck to you and Kazan. But I have a solution, an escape. We have more important things to worry about than survival at the moment. Connection lost. Oni, you fools. You would rather keep your secrets safe than keep your charges alive. Even now, I have a prowler under Bias Bay, upgraded with bracket something new, slash something blue bracket. But you continue to your castle and doom yourselves. I could have saved you, June. Parentheses. I've forgiven you for those cranes you damaged, by the way.
Parentheses. I like how that's one of the concerns of the AI.
Of the superintendent.
Yeah, exactly,
AI.
Right.
Wait, I see something. Your uncles and aunts, your brothers and sisters, falling in the sky. They come to defend the planet. They come to save Halsey. Hope? I'd forgotten it in the last few days. Perhaps I can still save my children here. Bracket living slash dying under the shadow of the Covenant. Perhaps there's still a chance for all of us who still bracket breathe slash think slash process end bracket.
And obviously, this is all paired with very interesting visual design and layout choices as well.
Yeah, like they paired with a good artist, I think. It was a bit, I talked with the Tori a little bit, they looked at the beginning of it, where it's like, it seems odd the design at first, but then you get into it, it really does make more sense, where it's like lore specific, fits the action scene, so pretty good drawings.
Yeah, I think the art definitely grew on me as I went along. At first I was like, it's a little bit stiff.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's a little bit stiff. Halo. It's fine. It like fits fine.
That's fine. And then like, yeah, it talks about the missions of the castle based mission, which is getting Halsey safe. It has a little, you know, biographies of all the ODSTs there that you see for a second, names. And then like a report from after the war is over, like 1 year ago today, Reach fell. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing. And then more lore stuff about Operation White Glove
and a back cover, which looks pretty reasonable too. It's got a barcode.
Well, if you notice the barcode, the number on the barcode is all 777777777777.
Well, that's not legit.
And the price is $343. dollars.
But I think we can probably close up our thoughts, though, having like reached the physical end of the PDF.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, we were kind of, as you indicated, we're kind of getting into final thoughts in the middle there also. But
yeah,
what complaints might you have about this piece?
That's, I guess, a little bit unclear what they're trying to say, it seems like. It's a bit difficult, something like this, where it's an action franchise and like a big picture thing, and also a part in canon where technically this doesn't affect things,
right?
In a series where decisions are like destroy all living beings in the universe or not, you know.
I understand why the author chose a specific story that didn't affect anything else, because they're trying so hard to make it not affect anything else so that everything else can stay exactly the same.
Yeah. And right? They told a fun story with an interesting story with the insurrectionists and stuff. Mm-hmm. But like, it is kind of like, what is it about? What are they trying to say about these Spartan threes and their interactions with people? Because in universe, Spartan threes are like the mass produced version of Spartans. Mm-hmm. They're not genetically modified, they're not picked for the best. These are war orphans that are recruited, put into cheaper versions of the armor so they can churn them out more and have like a Spartan type fodder,
right?
And these are Noble Team is a specialist within that group.
All right. I knew what I was talking about, like you said, with Little Spartans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. I do feel like the larger messaging is maybe a little bit... the larger messaging is a little bit fuzzy. Like, I came out not entirely sure what meaning I was supposed to take from the story, besides, like, here's an action person doing cool action things.
And this is how they're affected by it.
Yeah, this is how they're affected by it, sure.
It introduces the concept of, like, why the insurrections are doing this, how that happens in the lore. But the thing is, the whole planet gets glassed.
Right.
The war ends, everything's fine later in the continuity. We don't feel how this affects anything. It's like a result of it, but but what was it for?
But here's, like, moving on to praise. I mean, if I just think about the main story, I'm like, oh yeah, that was a neat fan work.
Yeah.
But with the adjunct, it kind of makes me go back and think about this less as a story. And what it says on the back, or also on the front, is an unofficial companion piece to Halo Reach.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel more like this Dr. Halsey's journal that you have on the desk, where, like, this is here to flesh out the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it does.
Yeah.
Like, in several ways.
Because I did read this and then go back and play through Reach again to, refresh and stuff. And it does kind of touch upon things that happens in the game. Like, you do meet up with a bunch of insurrectionists at one point. And that's originally when you're deployed, what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like reminding you that this was there every day, that these people were there. It doesn't seem like a random thing that didn't appear in the other Halo games.
Mm-hmm. It seems like an important, very important part of the world when you're reading this.
Yeah, and this is like the first part, the first game where you're on a human planet in Reach for in a Halo game for an extended period of time. That's not Earth, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That really fleshes out what that culture is like, what that environment is like, you know.
What some of the infrastructure is like, even.
Infrastructure is like, yeah. There's like interstellar spaceport where they try to run off to as like the airport, and they shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
It's also interesting because, like, you do get bits of stuff about the characters. You get, like, Carter making decisions. You get Kat with a jetpack saving people. You get, discussions about Emil, the close combat guy, about, like, how, like, because it starts off in the flashbacks with him without his design on his helmet. Then he gets, like, blasted in the face, and then he scratches the skull into his helmet after that. And about George, which is the Spartan 2, who was originally from Reach. So he was too sentimental in order to leave Reach. And in the game, this settlers of Reach, us being Hungarian.
Mm-hmm.
And George talks to locals in Hungarian in the game.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. That's also for the Master Chief Collection. Good on them for subtitling it as actually what he's saying in Hungarian. Like the actual Hungarian words, and not just brackets, speaking foreign language brackets. I hate it when subtitlers do that.
Well, yeah, for sure.
Closed captioners, I guess. But yeah. And it's just like about George having a connection with Reach while still being a giant monster, pretty much. But still trying to connect with the people. In the game, he's like, there's like frightened civilians, and he like tries to talk to them. And they're like freaking out. But yeah, he tries to comfort June, but he's still a giant thing with a Gatling gun doing his mission. Sorry, I went off for a bit.
Well, did you get a chance to say your favorite thing? Is it similar?
My favorite things were like the gameplay inclusions that made sense in fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Like looking down the sniper scope, that is how it looks in the game.
I would say that whole fight scene that we kind of like got into the weeds there a little bit, because it is very well done.
The nods of the gameplay informing and enhancing like the story and the world, where it's like, yeah, those are the HUD that they see. That is
right.
In your verse, those game-like fucking HUD designs are what the military uses. The ODST talks about shooting the gap in the shields.
Right.
June takes a knife to the orange bits of the hunter, it feels very satisfying.
Yeah, it does.
Someone who's played the games.
So overall, like I would say, I don't know if I would recommend this to me, who like doesn't really never, I never played through a single player Halo. But like, if you
didn't even do it a companion co-op with somebody,
I started co-op with someone,
right?
Maybe you,
probably,
but like not a lot. I remember playing some of it.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like if you have any kind of like general Halo understanding, or especially like if you played Halo Reach, this seems really cool.
Definitely, this is like, if you played Halo Reach recently, read this and it's fine.
And I understand why both the fandom and the companies are like, oh yeah, sure, that can basically just be canon. Like, sure, why not?
I was going to ask you, does this count as fan fiction, a model, if it is that recognized by the official sources?
Yes, because it was created as fan fiction.
And not adopted as official canon officially.
Even if it was adopted as official canon officially later on, I would say if it was created as a fan work with the intent of sharing it with fans with no blessing from the rights holders, it's still a fanfic.
Created as a fanfic.
Right.
Okay. I think that's a different episode. You can go back and listen to our roundtable on what is and is not fanfiction.
So yeah, there's no doubt in my mind, but it is always interesting finding these things that kind of are skirting that line more than most, right?
Well, because this is like a person that's like involved with the creation of the, with like the company and stuff.
That's right.
It's always, I really enjoy when people that work on something make fan works of that franchise that they've done some part of.
I was thinking that also, where like, if you're like a concept artist,
yeah,
you must get some jobs where like, you're like, fine, okay, I mean, yeah, I do the job. Like, you know, you try to do the thing, you do the best you can. You're not necessarily heavily invested in it.
Yeah.
So like, it kind of makes me happy for this artist specifically that they got a job and they clearly like worked on this and they were like, oh man, I really like this.
Yeah.
I'm into it. I'm going to do more for fun. Like, I don't know. It makes, gives me happy vibes.
And then it's an interesting feedback loop when the original material company sees it and talks about, well, we could talk about Adventure Time sometime with like, you know, Fiona and Cake. And,
sure. Yeah.
Because those were all like fan things done by some of the creators on the show that was readapted in.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we can talk about that later. That'd be interesting to discuss.
You know, I just pulled up Adventure Time to try to, you know, check when it came out, 2010. But I accidentally typed Adventure Tim. And then I was like, oh, wasn't there a character named Adventure Tim?
That was in the comics, I think.
Yes, yeah. In the comics.
Yeah.
But that was just such a great name.
Did you watch the Fiona and Cake show?
I did not.
It's very good. You should check it out.
Adventure Time is good, so I would expect it to be good.
I mean, the main problem in the show is that they exist when they shouldn't be canon.
That's great.
Yeah. I think you'd appreciate it.
All right. Well, on that note of things that should not exist, we have a podcast here. And I guess we're going to bring it to a close.
Mm-hmm.
This was episode 169.
Nice.
Of Retro Fanfic Retrospective. I gave you a moment to say that.
Thank you. I mean, it's not something I want to do. It's internet law, pretty much.
I mean, that's basically true.
Any mention of that number requires someone going, nice.
That's like, it's kind of like the George Takei, oh my, I guess, right?
Oh my. Yeah. Oh, we'll get to this once we get to the episode after 419, too.
Anyway, someday. The fan comic A Fistful of Arrows by Levi. I just closed that part of my phone. By some manner of Levi?
Mm-hmm.
Strauss? Hoffmeyer.
Oh.
Commonly known as Leviathan. You can find it on the fan site.
Oh, I just got that. Levi Leviathan. That's good.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
My name doesn't have such good nicknames.
That hasn't stopped me before.
You can find it on leviathan.bungie.org. I mean, I'll provide the link, but that's also the link. And remember to look at the bottom right of the website and get the PDF copy and save yourself some grief.
Please.
The intro song for the podcast is The Weekly Fair off of the album Popey's Incredible Adventure by Komiku, unless Della decides to pull the soundtrack to the comic that is available there. The outro song is presumably Run Against the Universe from that same album. You can find that album and other works by Komiku at loyaltyfreakmusic.com.
I'm not pulling that music.
Oh, okay.
That's too much work, Amato.
Our podcast is edited by Della Rose, who does the minimum work possible to keep this podcast going.
Damn straight.
And you can find our website at retrofanficretrospective.podbean.com or bit.ly/retrofanfic. If you've got questions, comments, or thoughts about the episode, shoot us an email at retrofanficretrospective@gmail.com. You could also leave comments, reviews on Apple Podcasts or such. I'm Amato.
I'm Della.
A moment of silence for the other members of our team. We're just two remaining Earth life forms trying to be nice to each other. Until next time, take care.
Because at the end of I Love Bees, they mention a weapon cache on the top of New Mombasa. Oh, that's from the Halo 1.5 Chicago. So I spent a lot of time in Halo 2 trying to jump on the rooftops, trying to find where that weapon cache could be. I found one that could be. It's like a sniper rifle and a couple of grenades. But I wouldn't really consider that a weapon cache. The thing is, like, I think, wait, don't fade out. No.
All right. You want to jump in and talk about this and see what we have to say?
Change in format. That's fine. I can adapt things and I'm just missing a person I really like. That's fine.
Oh. I... Are you ready?
What episode number is this?
Good question. So, what just came out?
Did Alien just come out?
Butterfree just came out. So this is 169.
Nice.
I don't think that works if it's 169, right?
It's not a thing that makes sense. It's any reference to the number. But you're right.